you want this?
Alright, sorry. Hey, you got that. That's awesome. Thank you. This chapter, I remember, changed my life. Like, I was not the same person after I read this chapter as I was before it. And I know that's not necessarily going to be the case for everybody, because everybody has, like, different questions or thinking about different things that are going on. And even now when I read it, I think there's different things that jump out to me than I did the first time, even though I can still see and feel those things that hit me the first time. But I was, like, I was not the same person after this chapter. Any bits that jumped out to you guys, or any bits where you had questions on them?
What jumped out to me was we're talking about, it says, you're only keeping up a life you got from someone else, in the same way the Christian can use the Christ life. It's like talking about, like, it's kind of like a metaphor between, like, our bodies and our lives and being a Christian. And I guess why that jumped out to me, because I found that idea really appealing, of, like, being a Christian isn't just saying, like, oh yeah, I know, like, yeah, I think Jesus is real, but it's actually, like, there's maintenance involved, or, like, there's eating,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 totally, totally.
The images that I get when I read through this of sin,
yeah,
really, really good.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. It's almost like without that emphasis, it almost feels like we end up being spiritually impoverished.
Yeah.
Like if we're not, if it's just like, if we just boil everything down to, like, a kind of, like, sort of believe, yeah, this
and thing. Then something else. Is at the very end, and I think I feel this way just because, like, growing up, I didn't, like, go to church.
Yeah.
And this is, like, what I thought, like, the whole church deal was for so long.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, dude, we're at the end. I'm sorry to be on it. Like,
yeah.
You know? So, but in the same way, I know he's not. I guess my mind was, like, telling me, like, what C.S. Lewis is saying is, like, hey, dude, like, you should be a Christian because of this.
Yeah.
And I know he's probably not saying that. He's probably just like, hey, is that reality? If this is what you believe, with, like,
yeah,
the whole preface of the rest of the book.
Yeah.
Like, if you believe in Christ,
yeah,
this is what reality will be.
Yeah. 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 It's really interesting, because I think that we've all probably had interaction with some evangelists that are like, believe or die, and, like, maybe we've even been that person at times where it's like, dude, believe this or go to hell. Like, here's your options. Take your pick. And the problem with that person isn't that what they're saying is inherently false. The problem is that what they're saying is a very, very incomplete representation of a much larger picture.
Yeah.
And they're taking the much larger picture and they're trying to boil it down to this one element.
Yeah.
I think that Lewis, he sets a fantastic example for us here. Because here, at the end of this thing, he's almost doing the same thing as the believer burn guy. He's almost doing the same thing, but because the way he has got there, because he has laid out the whole picture, he's put it all in front of us. You see that one bit in the context, and, like, the choice actually makes sense one way or the other. You can see it all. And if you just took this one bit out, it wouldn't, like, it just, it, it doesn't, and it's not to say that it can't make sense, that there's no way it can, because it's possible.
Yeah.
But in general, I think you find that it won't as much. And so I think it's really encouraging for me seeing something like that here, because it says to me, look, the people who are evangelizing that way, dude, they're not like totally off the rocker.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's a bad or, you know, unchristian idea that's there.
Yeah.
But it's a really, really incomplete picture.
Yeah.
And if you fill in all of the rest of these things, then when you get to the point where you say, look, you really have to choose one way or the other.
Like
you can't just sit on the fence with this.
Day.
It suddenly feels I don't know. It's just, it's so much more compelling. For me, it really wasn't that way. It's like, I'd had coming across Believe or Burn people before. And it's just like, in one ear and out the other, you can just ignore them. But when he sets up the whole faith this way, he presents what Scripture is saying.
Yeah.
And then he lays down the gauntlet. Suddenly it's like, I couldn't ignore it.
Yeah.
Which is like encouraging, I think, for us and the way we interact with folks.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the way that he said it, because usually, like, I think evangelists that I've come in contact with, kind of like a believe or die kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's no bright side to Christianity.
Yeah.
Except for you don't
go to hell.
Yeah, totally,
you know,
totally.
And it's just like, okay. So
totally.
It's like,
which is exactly what Jesus did.
Terrible.
He said there's no bright side to this whatsoever. It's only a get out of hell free card. That's all it is. I think there's a verse somewhere. I can't remember where it is. I'll have to look it up.
So that's why I like it would be the most beautiful thing for some people, but for others it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And that's where I was like, okay, yeah, that's like, I think a really good way of putting it, of saying like, yeah, you think this isn't all about the death, it's actually about like something beautiful.
Yeah.
So.
Totally. Totally.
This isn't about the chapter, but I feel like Jesus was more about, he was harder on the people that knew already and weren't like walking well.
Yeah.
They weren't taking care of it well.
Totally.
Like, I think he targets those people more than anyone else.
Dude, totally. I think the principle that you find that where he says in Luke, whatever, he says, to him much is given, much will be required. You see that embodied throughout his ministry in the way that he interacts with people. It's like when you have if he's just interacting with a prostitute or something like that. Like, we don't know that person's story. We don't have whatever. But in general, prostitutes usually aren't descended from like the highest class kind of people with the best, you know, moral upbringings and stuff. And it's not like he's just like, hey, how's it going? Let's be buddies. But he treats her with dignity and he says, you know, sin no more. There's a kindness that's there, which you don't see reflected in the same ways when he's interacting with people who are supposed to be the religious leaders, who have been entrusted with a lot of responsibility and are using those things for their own advantage, which is for me, honestly, I always need all of you guys around me to keep me accountable for stuff, because it's like, I always need to be in a position of like complete dependence on the Lord and like complete, like, Lord, if I am wrong in anything, please whack me over the head. Or if my heart is harboring something that is not true, or something where it's like, this is something that's to my own advantage here, and I'm letting myself do that, and I'm lying to myself in some way, Lord, please whack me over the head, or send one of these young people to whack me over the head, because it's like, I need it. I think you see that principle embodied throughout Christ's ministry, like, and you see James pick it up, let not many of you become teachers, because you know that we'll incur a stricter judgment. I feel that, and so it's like, it doesn't mean like don't teach, because teaching's awesome. We need teaching. Like, you guys can all make great teachers. I've heard you guys talk about all kinds of stuff. It's great, but all it means is like for me, I just need to throw myself at the Lord's feet, and whenever I have sin in my life, I just need to just throw my face on the floor. I'm like, Lord, I got sin, help. Like, any of my own place where I don't have sin, I just throw my face on the Lord and say, Lord, help. Like, I need your help. It's totally true. Some of the stuff that jumps out to me in this one is, it's interesting, he talks about the ways that the Christ life is communicated to us. And I think that this jumps out to me more because I think when I was younger, because the church settings I had been in, I mean, I've been in so many wheels off church settings, so many fun, wacky, wild stuff. And so he talks about three things that spread the Christ life to us: baptism, belief, Holy Communion, or like the Lord's Supper, the Mass, whatever he gives a few names for it. And I can say, like, from my background, which is in some ways similar to some of you guys' backgrounds, first one, like, it's really number two, which is the big one, which is like, this is the way that the Christ life is communicated, is through belief. Like, number one and number three is just kind of like these tangential things where, like, I don't really know what those are. But if we're going to take, I think if we're going to take historic Christianity seriously, and as being something which really goes and passes on the wisdom of Scripture and the wisdom of God, therefore, I think that it's good for us to, like, to recognize that all of these things, baptism, belief, and call it what you will, like the Lord's Supper, Holy Communion, that God intends all of these things as means of grace. Means of grace. Means by which, like Lewis says here, God communicates his life to us so that we are empowered. I think it's just good stuff. And there's still parts of that that feel a little unfamiliar to me and a little foreign, just because, like, it's not really, like, I remember I became a believer when I was in fourth grade. I was baptized, I think, in seventh grade. But not really for any good reason. I think it was mostly because, like, when I was in fifth grade, I had a Sunday school teacher who was really, really insistent that if you were not baptized, you're going to hell. I don't care how nice you are. I don't care how much you believe in Jesus. You're going to hell. And so I think that was probably the main thing that was, like, made me want to get baptized, which is kind of a bummer, because there's a lot better reasons. But the whole point of it is that I think looking at it that way is totally the wrong way. I think that if we're looking at this, even though I can't say this is something I've experienced, if I'm looking through the history of the church and I'm looking through, I think what is the message of Scripture as well, and this is what Lewis is trying to say, to be baptized, God does something. There's something that happens. Like, if you guys remember the Romans class from last year, I think we were in Romans 6 when we were going over this stuff. And Paul is talking about, like, in your baptism, like, you're actually buried with Christ. Like, you died and you're buried with Christ, and then you rose again from that. And I was saying at that point, I remember reading through Romans 6, and I couldn't make sense of it before, because in my mind, baptism is just like this kind of symbolic thing that doesn't actually mean anything. There's no, like, God isn't actually operating in it. It's just like it's a symbol where you stand in front of the church and they put some water on your head, and it means that, like, you get to, like, tithe here now, and we're going to put your name on here and we're going to send mail to you. It's like, we put the water on your head and then you get on our mailing list, and that's what happens. Seriously, that's the framework that I had. And I could not make sense of Romans 6 until I got to the point where I thought, baptism, it does something. Paul really, really thinks, and it's kind of funny because I still lag behind Paul. Like, I got to the point where I was like, Paul, like, this text doesn't make any sense unless something actually happens in baptism. If nothing happens in baptism, this doesn't make any sense. And so I was like, okay, so Paul thinks that, like, something happens in baptism. It's like, well, Paul's superstitious then. He believes in magic. That's fun. It was like, no, check yourself, Matt. Wait a second. Like, do you know better than Paul on this? And I have to say, like, probably not. In most things, I don't know better than Paul. So I should listen to him. So I think maybe that's just a plug for baptism for those of you who aren't baptized. Whatever the heck that means or looks like, and whatever church you're part of. One of the things that I have a job right now where I'm doing some editing for it's the Oxford Handbook of Sacramental Theology, which sounds really cool and complicated. It is kind of cool and complicated, really cool. Actually. It's sort of fun. And one of the things
You're
that's
a big deal.
One of the things that's encouraging is that if you're looking at baptism amongst all the different churches, in the world, even the ones that kind of really distrust each other and things like that. So it's like, if you have, like, the Orthodox over here and you've got, like, the wheels off Pentecostals over here, like, just no rules Pentecostalism. Like, we're just going to show up and do crazy stuff and see what happens. When it comes to baptism, at least, there's a lot of mutual recognition, because it's like baptism, it's like, as long as you're using the formula that Christ gave when he sent people out, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, as long as you're doing that, like, it's mutually recognized by everybody, which is really cool, because there's certain parts of the church where, you know, that's just not the case. There's not that kind of correspondence. But with baptism, it's kind of like wherever you go, as long as they're in, like some churches kind of make up stuff, they're just like, we're going to baptize you in the name of the Creator and the Redeemer and the Sustainer, something like that. That's gotten, especially here in the States, that's gotten like, this is cool, we're going to make up some new stuff. Like, as long as it's not one of those places, like, everybody recognizes baptism. Every church, everywhere, like, wherever you're baptized, we don't care. As long as you say the things that Christ say to say, like, you're, like, sweet, that's awesome. Like, the Lord bless you. And he is blessing you through it. So that's kind of a cool deal. And I think, even though I'm not in a place where I feel like I understand everything with it, I think it's, you know, I think it's good to give a plug for baptism, like that. Because I think, as Lewis says, it's something that God means to communicate his life to us through. And the same with, I mean, for me, for most of my life, Holy Communion has been an even bigger, like, I have no idea what's going on here. Like, we talked about this someone, the can of, who here was at the Can of Worms night last year? It was 1, 2, 3, 4, you over there. I remember we talked about this a lot last year, and, like, the importance of Holy Communion in the church. It's like, this is what you do when you go to church. It's like, you receive the body and blood of Christ, and he, like, Christ is present there, and he gives you grace through this. He's present in the actual thing, which is something that Lewis makes it like a big deal of too elsewhere. It's really interesting. And, like, whatever views you have on it, I think it is good true theology to, you know, to hold that God somehow means to communicate his life to us through this. And it sounds kind of weird. It sounds kind of like hocus pocus. But I think that there's a reality to it, and I think that Lewis is a faithful witness on it. There's still parts of it that I feel like, look, I don't totally understand it. This is just like it's. He has this great line where he's talking about, like, I'm not saying there are special cases where it's spread without one or more of these. It's like, I look at my own life, I'm like, Lord, I'm the special case, because, like, I've been raised with belief and crazy wheels off spiritual gifts, Pentecostal stuff, like all kinds of good, bad, you know, all over the place. Like, I feel like I'm sort of the special case in that sense, where it's like the way that most of the church throughout history that God has sustained it, I've some of those things have reached me, and other parts are just like, I don't know, they're just totally like, I've just never really gone to services until like fairly recently, like going to Anglican churches and stuff where you know, where Holy Communion is a big deal. But now coming in contact with it, I'm like, dude, this is sweet. Like, I totally see why this is a big deal. Like, I mean, for me, in my own experience, it's like, it makes me want to go to church. Like, you feel like, it's like, if God is actually giving grace through this act, there's some way, however you understand it, that he means to sustain your faith and even to build your faith by it. Well, then there's a reason to show up on Sunday. Like, there's a reason to get my, you know, my lazy A-double snakes out of bed and, like, actually be there, because there's a thing that's going to happen. It's not just like I can kind of tune in with my podcast and sort of do the thing, get some teaching or whatever, and like listen to a, you know, sing a worship song in the shower. Which is, again, it's kind of the like the church framework that I'm used to. It's kind of like you do it on your own and you sort of make it up. It's like, look, if God means, if Lewis is right here, and I think he is, I think he's a faithful witness here. If there's something that happens in this, and if something happens by which God means to sustain us and to bring his life into us, to bring this Christ life into us, and however we understand it, however we make sense of this, whatever paradigm we use, it's worth showing up for. And I think it's worth going to a church where this is made like a, like, I remember, I think it was last summer. Do you guys remember when Albert and a couple other folks were doing the church thingy? What was the thing called again? What was
it? Was Soma. Soma's its own church, but the event where, like, all the churches were.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing, exactly. I think I only went to one of those. I went to one, and but that was something where I don't know who's behind the theology of this, but they totally had that front and center of the thing. It's like, you had the message, and then what do you do after that? Like, you have the Lord's Supper. And I think it's worth going to a church where you participate in that. Like, if not, it almost feels like one of the things that God has given to us to sustain us, we're kind of like, yeah, whatever. I can kind of do it on my own, which is like possible. Maybe God gives special grace in that way. But it's like, if I was a dad and I had a kid, and I'm like, oh man, I got this cool thing for his kid that's gonna help him. It's gonna be really, really good. And the kid's like, yeah, that's cool. Thanks for that. But I'm gonna kind of go and do this on my own. But thanks. Like, you give me some other stuff which is cool, and like that thing, yeah, sure. Like, kind of, you know, whatever. Dad would kind of be like, dude, come on, man. Like, what gives? Like, I love you. Like, I want to help you. I want to help you grow. You know, like, trust me on this, even if this seems weird, doesn't make sense. And I feel like kind of when it comes to, you know, to, again, whatever term you're going to use, Holy Communion, I feel like it's kind of like that. Might feel weird or like, I don't get this, whatever this is, you know, whatever. But I think there's something there. I think there's something there. Again, kind of preaching myself at that point, get my lazy double snakes out of bed on Sunday. So, any questions on any of those bits? There's another bit here which I thought that was just really interesting, where he says, "Do not think I am sitting at baptism and belief in the Holy Communion as things that will do instead of your own attempts to copy Christ." It's really interesting because he puts those things together really well. And if you look from a some of the people, you can say, if you have like cranky Protestants on one hand and cranky Catholics and cranky Orthodox on the other hand, some of the crankier Protestants will say, oh, you Catholics and Orthodox, you guys are just, this is the sock puppet version, you guys are just relying on these things that you just think because you got baptized you're going to go to heaven, and you're not actually doing anything. What's wrong with you? Or you think because you took the Holy Communion, that's actually be good enough for you. That's stupid. Which, if you're just taking, like, they could possibly be right. It's like somebody could go and say, you know, oh, I'm baptized, so I'm going to heaven. But that would not be a faithful representation of what Christianity says. And conversely, you could have a cranky Orthodox guy over here who says, you stupid Protestants, you think that you can just go be good people and you're just going to go follow Christ and that's it. But Christ has instituted these things in baptism and the Eucharist and this, and you don't even care. You don't even care about the things that Christ instituted. You're just like, oh, I'm just going to do things all by myself. Look at me. Which is like, yeah, that's true. Like, that can happen. It is possible. Like, I've been that person at times where it's like, I'm just going to follow Christ. What has Christ instituted? I don't care. I'm just going to do whatever I want and whatever I think following Christ means. That's what I'm going to do.
You're a sock puppet sometimes, too.
Yeah, it's something like I'll pretend to be a sock puppet. That's what Christ wants me to do. So yeah, that can be true. But I don't think that paradigm, that either or, like Lewis. Again, I'm just going to set it up. Do not think I am setting up baptism and belief in the Holy Communion as things that will do instead of your own attempts to copy Christ. It's like, you need both of those. They're meant to co-inhere. They're meant to establish one another. They're meant to work together. And over reliance on it, I'm just going to copy Christ on my own without the things that God has given us to actually put the life into us so that we can copy Him. We're just saying, oh, look at these cool means of grace. Like, that'll just do it for me. It'll be automatic and fun. Like, both of those are equal and opposite, you could say, heresies. Those are both going to be problematic. So I just thought it was a really helpful way he put that together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a lot of...
I really like where he says, in the same way, a Christian is not a man who never goes wrong, but a man who is enabled to repent and pick himself up and begin over again after each stumble. I think that was really cool. Just a cool way to paint kind of what our walk looks like, and just a way of connecting with other people. Like, a lot of the times I kind of get a vibe from just like, if I'm having a discussion about faith to, you know, maybe someone who doesn't share in my beliefs, and just like having a discussion, I feel like they one think it's not something for them because they don't live up to this like standard that you know, they feel like they'll be held to, as well as because we hold ourselves to these standards, like, we're almost better than them, and so we're judging them.
Yeah.
And so just to have this as kind of an explanation of like, no, dude, this is how our lives look like. We're not, you know, these, I don't know, perfect people who just walk around judging people, and we're like, dude, we're right along with you with messing up and things and like doing stupid crap. Like, that's, we're on the same road, man. Like, we're not that different.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that was awesome. It was really good. Just in case you're wondering, I think the part that changed my life was on 64, the second paragraph, the here's another thing that used to puzzle me part. I think that was the part that really, really, really got me. But we can just skip over that. But just in case you guys are wondering.
Here's another thing that used to puzzle me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just changed my life. I wrestled and struggled with that so much.
Feel free to explain.
I mean, I think he says it really well, and I don't want to belabor any of the points that are there. I mean, Lewis is fantastic on this topic and really across his works. And it's something that he tackles head on really, really well, which is just, for me, it was just super, super, super helpful, because it's like, just as a person having experienced so much of the grace of God in my own life, but also like, God, how do I make sense of this on like a global perspective throughout history? How do I make sense of all these things? And the church context that I was from was not of any help at all in answering questions like that. There just wasn't, you know, it was like, you know, believe in Jesus and eat ice cream. It was really like the kind of the main sort of message that was there. There's a lot of other great stuff that came along with it. And I want to say like there's nothing else good. There's a lot of like really faithful people that encouraged me, but it just wasn't helpful for questions like that. And Lewis is great at passing on a lot of the wisdom in the church from that. Anyway, I don't want to belabor this stuff. We can jump to the next chapter. Does that sound good? Sweet. Any parts jump out to you, or any spots that were unclear where you had questions?
I loved when you talked about it doesn't matter. You can't make a moral man through law,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what we try to do. Like,
yeah.
That's what, like, especially like in America, like that,
yeah,
is,
yeah,
like the whole deal. It's like,
yeah,
oh, like all this crime and terrible things are happening. Like, let's make laws and they'll stop happening. And it's,
yeah,
like, no, they don't. And
yeah,
it's never worked.
Yeah.
And it never will.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the emphasis on like, I've been thinking about like too, like, I think he's telling like a nation this, like,
yeah,
hey dude, like, yeah, law is sick, but like, it's not gonna make good people.
Yeah.
Like, regardless.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking like, hey, like, we need that. Like,
yeah.
We need to have a higher emphasis on how we are treating our own ship.
Yeah.
On the deal.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
How we're thinking about our, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. I love it.
I'm gonna tell you the story. It's exactly on that, because at Pepperdine, I was a political science major, and I was like, my career path was like going towards like working in like Washington D.C. and doing like politics,
yeah,
something. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was interesting. I was like, I can kind of do this stuff and be okay. And this is between my, so this is the summer after I read this book, and I was visiting my uncle in my uncle Bruce, who, if you guys are at our wedding, you will meet Uncle Bruce. Not me and Uncle Bruce's wedding, but me and Leanne's wedding. If you're at, or me and Nick Carroll's wedding.
Before?
Yeah. If you guys come to me and Leanne's wedding, you'll meet my Uncle Bruce. Amazing guy. I talk about him all the time. He runs this Christian boarding school. And I'm actually wearing a shirt right now, French Camp Panthers. This is actually his shirt he gave me.
Awesome.
Coach of the football team. He's unbelievable guy. I was over there visiting him. This was between my sophomore and junior years at Pepperdine in the summer. And I'm in central Mississippi, and we're swimming in a lake together, just kind of talking and stuff. He's asking about my career path, what I'm going to do. I'm like, yeah, you know, You know, I'm thinking about kind of going into politics and just doing things. It's like, you know, we need believers kind of in that field, and people that, you know, have integrity, and kind of, you know, that just seems like a good thing to be interested in. He's like, yeah, you know, that's true. That's good. But, at the end of the day, you know, you can't make a law that's going to make people love each other. You can't legislate people loving each other. Just having a better law isn't going to do it. And I was just, like, sitting there. It's like, so we're both in the lake, like, kind of treading water. And I just, like, start, like, sinking, like, as I'm it's like, wow, that was really good. That was a really good point. Because I'm actually thinking, it's like, Lord, like, what really matters? People loving each other. Can my career track accomplish this? No. It cannot. Is this career track, you know, valuable potentially? Yeah. Can it do what I am wanting to happen, what I'm hoping that God will do through my life? No, it cannot. It's like almost like if I can trace the beginning of me moving from being a poli-sci international studies guy to me going into like inner city ministry and working at Harper House, it's like if that plan was a ship, it's like Uncle Bruce like fired a cannonball that just like wounded the ship mortally, and it still sailed for a little while, but it was like taken on water, and then it sunk, you know, about a year and a half after that. It finally completely sunk. And then it was like from there I sort of like, you know, man overboard and floated over to the inner city ministry land. It's literally how it happened. It all came back to that. It's the exact same point you have there. It's like, yeah, law is good, follow law, it's great, but like we're not really having a very deep discussion at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it's not really substantive. It's only when you get to like point two and point three that like we really start having discussions about what morality is and what right and wrong is. And like in the moral discourse that just we find around us most of the time, that just doesn't happen to be there. It's like hey, should you punch somebody in the face? Probably not. Like, you know, in most situations that shouldn't happen. But like, what should I do in my own life? How should I relate to myself? What kinds of things are okay? Like for me, it's like that, like, that's usually, it's like if, like, you know, if you're just, like, in a public school or something like that, it's like,
yeah,
there's no place for any, like, substantive discussion on that kind of stuff. And it's like, if you go into a third order thing where it's like, wait a second, what is the actual destination supposed to be? Where are we all, like, aiming towards? Like, there's just, we just don't have any place for that, which is why a lot of our moral discourse just ends up, it just ends up really shallow.
Something that, I've thought about, and this goes along with our earlier conversation, was that, like, when I deal with people who are just, like, rude to me for no reason at all, like, I'm like, dude, why are you being so rude? I don't deserve that at all. And it's just, like, really, I'm thinking, based on how I treat other people,
yeah,
you're treating me wrong. But that's because how I grew up, I kind of developed my own like moral code of like how other people should be treated.
Hmm.
But somebody who doesn't have like faith or any type of like Christian background or any religion for that matter,
yeah,
who is just being grown up, like who's just learning morality from society, I look at like, dude, there is nothing there to teach you how to treat another person.
Yeah.
Like outside of being 9 years old and watching like Disney Channel, like that's the only way people learn how to treat other people, and that makes it like that gives me so much grace for those people who it's like, wow, like yeah, I understand why you're treating me like this, because like
yeah,
where else would you learn how to treat? How would you learn how to treat someone?
Totally, and if even if you had a situation where like they were given a really, like, step one was taken care of for them, so they had a really clear sense of, hey, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, which I think in some ways God has given us. There's some sense of conscience, although from a societal standpoint, we don't really help that tons a lot of the time. We help it some. But even granted that, even if you have step one taken care of, there's two problems that you have to give answers to. There's two things that, if you want to get step one right, there's two things that you need to address. One is the how question. So how are you going to do this? What are the means by which, if this is something that is hard to do, to treat people in the right way, what is the means by which I am going to be able to become a person who is going to be able to treat people in this way with any kind of consistency? So how am I going to get to the point where I fulfill, you know, fulfill this law, whatever it is? And then point two is the even bigger one, which we can answer even less, is why? Why should I do this? Why should I bother taking these demands of the moral law upon myself as if they're a real thing, which is actually coming to me, which is like exists in heaven or some transcendent universe somewhere? It's like, is that the case? Does this law actually, does it have some sort of reality besides you just saying I should do this? Or is it just you saying I should do this because you think I should do this, and so you're inventing this thing called the capital L law, which we should all adhere to? Which is it? Why should I bother? And you find, it's like, you know, a really one of the really fun places to go into to see the tensions that we have with stuff like this is just go to a public school, like, and kind of see the ways that we try to answer these questions, because it's almost like every teacher's classroom you go into, like, they're like, it just seems like they're almost all different. There's not like a real clear thing that's there. Like, one of the ideas in these parts you get appropriate a lot is like ideas of like karma, things like that, which is like, you can see, like, that's an attempt to say, look, there's some sort of transcendent thing in the universe, which is like, you know, which is gonna kind of take care of things, whatever happens to be. I remember, like, I remember this is really funny. I went one time, and I was this is with one of the kids from Harbor House, Emmanuel, who I think some of you guys know. I think you guys have seen, you know him. I think you guys have seen pictures of him because he's one of the hockey guys. Anyway, I got to go into his classroom. It was like his third grade classroom. It was like at the end of the year, and go talk to them about kind of what Emmanuel did with playing hockey and stuff. So we're like, I was just in there talking to him, and they asked us, sort of like, how'd you do this? I'm like, well, like, the way I started doing this is like, I was just praying one day, and like, I feel like the Lord wanted me to move this, all this hockey stuff over to Oakland and start doing this. And so I was like, I was kind of scared. I didn't really know what to do because it seemed weird, but like, I felt this is what the Lord wanted me to do. So I'm like, all right, sweet. Well, let's just see what happens then. And it kind of went from there. And then this opportunity came up, and this kind of opportunity. And so, like, I wasn't really like I wasn't like kind of shying away from any kind of theological language or whatever. Just like, I was just being honest with him in the way I talk to anybody else, because like, this is just what happened. And the teacher goes, and as soon as I'm done talking, the teacher goes and gives a 30-second corrected version of mine, what I just said, which replaces the word God with the universe everywhere, and then starts putting in ideas like karma, different things like that, and all kinds of stuff, which is like, it's like, that's a theological perspective. It's like, and she's totally entitled to that, and that's the way that things make sense. Dude, bless her. But there's no neutral ground here. And that's one of the things that she's trying to do, is she's trying to say, okay, we need a neutral ground for morality. What is it going to be? We'll call it the universe. And then we'll take this other idea, you know, this Eastern idea of karma, and we'll put this in here too. But that's not a neutral ground. The universe is something that comes from like 18th century deism. Like, and you've sort of appropriated that and say, this is the ground we're operating on. And karma comes from Hinduism. You've kind of yanked this out and said, and these are the grounds that we're operating on, and this is what our morality is going to be, and stuff like that. Which is just as, like, I mean, there isn't any sense of neutral ground to that. Anyway, it's funny. We just don't really have a way to have any kind of substantial discourse about us. And it's funny. It's like, as silly as it feels here, like, in my experience, it's actually worse in Canada. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I like Canada. I like moose. I'm a big moose fan. But in my experience in Canada, there's actually,
it's the best apology that can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
But it's okay. I like moose.
No, totally.
Oh, he's a cool guy.
Yeah. In my experience, we actually still have, even with as fragmented things are in our culture here, we actually have more common moral discourse than there exists in Canada, in my experience. Because everything is just so hands off in those kinds of things. Like, you just can't make any kind of statement about anything. It's really, I don't know, it's just been interesting kind of following some of that stuff from, you know, from afar the past few years.
It's not just, I don't know, I'm asking a question, I guess. Not just about, like, moral stuff, but then about, like, everything. Is that kind of the culture there? It's, like, not really given an over opinion in any which way.
Well,
anything.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I won't spend too much time on it, but the two analogies that are given for Canada and the States is, you have the States is a melting pot. It's like a, you know, everybody comes in from different things and you kind of meld into something, which is an actual thing that's here. And what they say about Canada is it's a salad bowl. It's like you put a bunch of things in the salad bowl, but they don't actually turn into any kind of unified thing. Like, the crouton stays as a crouton. Like the walnut stays a walnut. The piece of lettuce stays a piece of lettuce. And sometimes, like, you know, sometimes the bits get on each other. Like, sometimes the salad dressing will get on the walnut or whatever. But all the things kind of stay themselves and remain fairly, you know, autonomous.
So, like, taking the example of the teacher trying to, like, neutralize your statement.
Yeah.
Could you, like, I don't know if this makes sense, but, like, if that was in Canada, like, what would she have, like, said if, I don't know, does that make sense?
Yeah,
like, a good
yeah,
question, like,
yeah.
What would she have just been, like, what would she have said that would be different from
No, totally. And I think, I mean, it's a good question. I don't know if I have a great answer to it. My sense is that she probably would have said something fairly similar. I think that the Bay Area in particular is probably closer to what Canada is like and in that respect than most of the rest of the U.S. is. Because most of the rest of the U.S. would go up and say something like that and be like, sweet, cool. Just because for the most of the rest of the U.S., I think that Christianity in general, even if it's just on a cultural level, has more influence than it does in a place like Canada. Just more embedded. So
that's basically saying that you can have an ideal that people need to work on themselves, but until you figure out, like, the destination, the ideal for working on yourself, like, it's not going to be right there. Like, it's never going to get you to the destination.
Sorry, say it one more time.
I think, like, at the end of the chapter, when he's talking about the three things that, the three departments.
Yeah.
And the relationship between man and man, and how you're talking about we can establish laws that have tried to guide our relationship between man and man.
Yeah.
And then the things inside each man, that's a great idea. And that's a great ideal to have everyone work on themselves, but until you know where you're going, that will never happen.
Yeah, I think what he's saying, I mean, I guess simplest answer would be yes. Simplest answer is if you have if you have different answers as to what the ultimate destiny of man is in one way or the other, then even the stage one questions, as far as, like, how the ships should interact with each other, like, it's just hard to get anywhere. So if one ship's convinced he's supposed to be going to New York, the other ship's convinced he's supposed to be going to Calcutta, then just saying that ships shouldn't run into each other, there's a more fundamental thing that's there. I think that Lewis is still strong at saying, look, God has given us conscience. I mean, as we talked about earlier, God has given us conscience, which fills out a lot of what step one is supposed to look like. But then there's still the second order and third order ones. We're just in need of more help with those things, I guess you could say. Any other questions or bits to camp with this?
I have a question.
Hello.
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 Real fast, could you just explain what you said one more time? I just want to make sure that I got it. Like, what you just said, like, real fast, like 30 seconds.
I think so.
It doesn't have to be 30 seconds, but...
Yeah, I think so. So, if you're taking the ship analogy, again, yeah. This is just restating what he says. You can say, like, the ship can agree with each other. So, ship A and ship B say, okay, we're agreed that we're not going to run into each other. Running into each other is bad. We're not going to do it. But if we go... Again, skipping second order would be what's actually happening with inside the ship. Like, are you actually feeding the sailors or not? Like, are the sailors just, have they forsworn water and they're drinking only whiskey? Like, that would be like a second order kind of thing. That's the second part of morality. Third part of morality is, like, where are we actually going? Like, where are we as a ship meant to go? And so if ship A says, we're going to Calcutta, and ship B says, we're going to New York, well then... When you jump back to the first order questions, and as far as ships shouldn't run into each other, you can't expect two ships to just go parallel side by side, and one saying, we're going to Calcutta, the other saying, we're going to New York. It's like, no, like,
okay.
it doesn't work.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, one more, real fast.
Yeah.
Back to your, so you're talking about, like, the teacher and stuff. And
yeah.
You're talking about, like,
yeah.
Pulling from a whole bunch of different places.
Yeah.
Would it be considered, like, a neutral stand on morality
yeah.
if you pulled from, like, every, like, different area? If you pulled from, like, Christian and, like, Hinduism and, like, all those places,
yeah.
like, then would it be neutral?
Yeah. What it would be, you couldn't call it neutral, because neutral is, like, being in no gear at all. I think that what you can do, and I think that this can be constructive, and I say this with some trepidation, but I say it also with some confidence too, because Lewis does it. So in like The Abolition of Man, the book that we've talked about a couple times, Lewis does this, and talking about like the Tao, or the Tao, however you want to pronounce the T thing, which is, he says, is like, it's kind of like a level one kind of morality thing that's there, which God has put within us, has put within humanity. And you can see this attested to throughout cultures and times and religions, kind of throughout all over the place. And Lewis says, look, this is actually constructive. And if you look in the back of his book, he just says, like, here is, like, you know, here is on the, like, the law of, like, special beneficence, which is, I think, means, like, that you should be extra kind towards those like who are weak, I think is what he means by that. And he goes and he just takes examples from different cultures, and, like, he kind of throughout time says, look, this is something that we find attestation to, and like those who have said, hey, we want to do right, we want to be moral. It's like, if you see the ones that say we don't want to be right, like we just want to like rape and pillage, well, they usually don't talk about special beneficence that much. But among those who say, like, hey, we want to, like, we think there's some kind of like gods like pterodactyl flying with like heaven, like, yeah, yep. Totally. And we think that because of that, we think that right and wrong is important. And one of the things that's there is like special beneficence. Like, you should be like those who are weak. You should take care of. Lewis says, look, you actually on those throughout history who have been trying, who have like cared one way or the other, you find that they've come to a lot of the same things. And Lewis sees that as being a constructive way to say, not that ultimately that's like your destination. That's at least a helpful starting point as far as saying, like, we can have moral conversations. There is an actual thing that's here that we see throughout time and place. I think it can be. I think Lewis sets a good example and also says, this is kind of how far this can go. This is how far this can take us.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. Thank you for coming.
See you.
See you on Monday. See ya. Any other questions or bits? I thought this is as a historical tidbit. One of the things that was interesting is he's talking about individuals versus like the nation or like the you know whatever happens to be. This is actually something that you see in the history of just like the history of the Western world is after Christianity goes and takes hold within the Roman Empire and then becomes, eventually, you know, later in the 4th century, becomes the official religion of the, of the empire. Yeah, of the, you know, kind of this, like, whatever the civilized world is at that point. What you find is that the empire doesn't last very long after that, which is really interesting. And part of the reason for that is because that suddenly human life is worth more. So whereas before people will give their lives for the empire because their lives in comparison to the empire just aren't that significant. They just don't have that much value. Suddenly, like, people start understanding their lives and the value that their lives have as being a lot greater, and the value that what God has called them to. There's suddenly like a new purpose that's there, you know, more than just like a, you know, make Rome great, make Rome, you know, survive, destroy her enemies. And so what you end up getting is that instead of, for instance, you know, instead of the people within the Roman Empire and whoever would have been your soldiers normally, instead of them being really interested in killing all the Goths and the Vandals and the Germans, the Germanic people, they start becoming much more interested in converting them. They're more interested in, like, and even if they're real crazy and real bloodthirsty and stuff, yeah, there's still a lot that are fighting. You still have that stuff. But you don't have that same kind of resolve where it's like, hey, everything for the empire. Because the individual is understood differently after that. The individual life is understood as having more value. And that holds both to the Roman and to the Vandal and the Goth and the Germanic nomad. And it's really interesting. It's what ends up happening is that these all these kind of like you know, barbarians come in and they attack the Roman Empire and eventually sack Rome and take it over. And what happens after that? Well, all the citizens go and convert all the barbarians, and then they kind of hang out and sort of become friends. And it's like, it's not all like simple and easy after that, but it really does transform them. And so, yeah, you lose an empire, you lose this kind of this powerful thing that's there. But that's the story of how the Germans become a Christian people. That's the story of how there's all these other different people, and that, you know, how Christianity spreads is through the people went and attacked, they took over, and then they saw that there's something else going on here. Something had changed. So just kind of interesting thing. Yeah. Any other bits? If not, we're kind of over time anyway, so I don't want to keep you guys.
So handsome.
That was my question too.
Stop that. Everyone. Stop.
That was my question.
Everyone, stop it. You're gonna make me blush.
Dude, I love how he kind of like
H&M.
Just like
when recently
brushes by like certain philosophical ideas and doesn't address them as such, but like the part where he's talking about.
For example, do you guys want to finish, by the way? Okay, we'll finish. Let's have some thanks.